Live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios, this is Bloomberg Daybreak for Friday, June 10th, 2022. Coming up this hour.
Insurrection investigation. The latest findings made public on the attack on the Capitol.
Inflation data. Markets brace for the latest reading on consumer prices.
State Street says no. The bank says it is not seeking a deal with Credit Suisse.
And another big Wall Street name reportedly faces an inquiry into hiring practices.
New York City says it's making progress in fighting COVID, plus the Texas police chief criticized for decisions in the school massacre is defending himself. I'm Michael Barr. More ahead.
I'm John Stasher in sports. Tampa Bay beat the Rangers and leads the series 3-2. A comeback win for the Yankees in Minnesota.
That's all straight ahead on Bloomberg Daybreak. On Bloomberg 1130 New York, Bloomberg 99.1 Washington, D.C., Bloomberg 1061 Boston, Bloomberg 960 San Francisco, Sirius XM 119, and around the world on BloombergRadio.com and via the Bloomberg Business app.
And good morning, I'm Karen Moscow.
I'm Nathan Hager. Bloomberg Daybreak is brought to you by Informatica. In the cloud, your data has the power to do the extraordinary. Manage data across any location in the cloud for accurate and actionable insights. More at Informatica.com.
And futures are little changed this morning. S&P futures down about 2 points. Dow futures down 45. And NASDAQ futures higher, up about 16. The DAX in Germany is down 1.6%. 10-year Treasury up 6/32, yield 3.01%. And the yield on the two-year, 2.82%. Nathan.
Okay, Karen, thank you. We'll get back to markets in a minute. We begin this morning in the nation's capital, where the House Committee investigating the insurrection at the U.S. Capitol on January 6th of last year held its first primetime hearings last night. We'll start where the hearing ended, with the chilling account of a police officer who was injured in the melee.
It was carnage. It was chaos.
U.S. Capitol Police Officer Caroline Edwards recounted how she became one of the first victims of the attack.
There were officers on the ground. They were bleeding. They were throwing up. They were, you know, they had... I saw friends with blood all over their faces. I was slipping in people's blood.
Capitol Police Officer Caroline Edwards says she suffered a brain injury that has prevented her from returning to duty.
Well, Nathan, the hearing also included videotaped testimony of top White House officials pushing back at former President Trump's claims of widespread voter fraud. Here's former Attorney General William Barr.
I made it clear I did not agree with the idea of saying the election was stolen and putting out this stuff, which I told the president was bullshit.
And the committee also played video footage, some described as never before seen, of the mob storming the Capitol, egged on by the former president's tweets in real time.
Mike Pence didn't have the courage to do what should have been done to protect our country and our Constitution.
Committee Chairman Benny Thompson.
Donald Trump, the President of the United States, spurred a mob of domestic enemies of the Constitution to march down the Capitol and subvert American democracy.
Chairman Thompson says American democracy remains in danger. House Republican leaders are blasting the committee as partisan. They're promising their own report in the events of January 6th.
All right, let's turn back to markets now, Karen. Stocks fell for a second straight day yesterday amid growth concerns. Investors will be closely watching the latest inflation data due out later this morning. It's expected to show annual consumer price gains of more than 8%. Charles Schwab, chief investment strategist Lizanne Saunders, says that estimate might be too low.
There's a bit more chatter, call it, you know, whisper numbers for the CPI being a little north of expectations. You add in a more hawkish stance by the ECB, and you have another weaker day.
Charles Schwab, chief investment strategist Lizanne Saunders, says recent swings in the market indicate a bear rally.
Well, after yesterday's sell-off on Wall Street, Nathan, European stocks are extending losses this morning. Asian shares are slumping as well, putting global equities on course for their worst weekly performance in a month.
And oil's headed for a seventh weekly gain, Karen, as investors weigh a tightening global market and the return of China as coronavirus lockdowns loosen. This week, Goldman Sachs boosted its price forecast into 2023, while OPEC warned that most members are maxed out on crude production.
Meanwhile, in corporate news, Nathan, Boston-based State Street is now denying a report it's looking to acquire Credit Suisse Group. And Bloomberg's John Tucker joins us live with the latest. Good morning, John.
And Karen, State Street says in an email now it's not pursuing any acquisition or business combination with Credit Suisse. There is no basis to the continuing market rumors, it reads. A Swiss blog reported that State Street could make a bid for Credit Suisse, citing a single person. A Jefferies financial group analyst says in a note to clients, for many reasons, we see this combination as highly unlikely. The Swiss bank has spent much of the past 18 months struggling to emerge from twin hits, the collapse of Archegos Capital Management and Greensill Capital. Its stock has fallen 73% over the past 8 years. Live in New York, I'm John Tucker, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Okay, John, thank you. Sticking with Wall Street, Goldman Sachs Chief Executive David Solomon has spoken exclusively with Bloomberg News about some of the big macro trends in business today. He points to AI and pharma, as well as biotech.
We had a pandemic and the government intervened, and there was a big public-private partnership between the government and vaccine manufacturers to accelerate the pace of the vaccines. But generally speaking, for regular technological advancement and innovation, I don't think we need to have public-private partnerships in the med tech or biotech space.
Goldman Sachs CEO David Solomon. And you can hear more of that interview across all Bloomberg platforms throughout the day.
And meanwhile, Nathan, another major bank is being investigated over hiring practices. And Bloomberg's Renita Young has the latest. Renita, good morning.
Nathan, Karen, good morning. Federal prosecutors are investigating claims that Wells Fargo violated anti-discrimination laws by conducting fake interviews with non-white and female job applicants. That's according to the New York Times, citing anonymous sources. The newly created Civil Rights Unit of the Manhattan U.S. Attorney's Office is leading the investigation, and this all comes after a May 19th New York Times report claiming the bank was interviewing diverse candidates for jobs that were already promised to other applicants. The fake interviews were reportedly the result of Wells Fargo's goal to increase diversity. Renita Young, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Okay, Renita, thank you. Ahead of this morning's CPI data, futures are little changed. Right now, S&P futures are up a point. Dow futures down 23. NASDAQ futures are higher by 32 points. 10-year Treasury is up 6.30 seconds. The yield close to 3.02%. Yield on the 2-year right now, 2.83%. NYMEX crude's up 0.2% or 18 cents at $121.68 a barrel. Straight ahead, we got your latest local headlines, plus a check of sports. This is Bloomberg. And it's now 5:07 on Wall Street. We're at 64 degrees in Central Park. If you're coming out of the Lincoln Tunnel, watch out for a disabled tractor trailer when you get into New Jersey. More coming up in traffic. First, Michael Barr with what else is going on in New York and around the world. Happy Friday, Michael.
Happy Friday to you, Nathan. New York City's health commissioner says that the city has passed its latest COVID-19 peak, citing a 26% drop in the case rate between May 23rd and June 5th. It counters 2 months' worth of sustained increase of virus transmission. Health Commissioner Ashwin Vasan says despite the city heading into a safer environment, he still encouraged New Yorkers to continue to wear masks indoors and test and stay home if they feel sick. New York City's requirement that 2 to 4 year old children wear masks in schools and daycare centers is coming to an end. Mayor Eric Adams said starting Monday, masks will be optional. Federal government data indicates the rate of new COVID infections has slowed in the Northeast, even as cases surge in other parts of the country. Dr. Aline Marty of Florida International University says two new Omicron subvariants are driving their numbers up.
76% of the cases in our hospitals right now are people who've never been vaccinated.
Dr. Marty spoke to ABC. 10 people in New York City likely have monkeypox. The city's health department says most of these people have had mild cases, have not been hospitalized, and have recovered on their own. There are new details about the police response to the elementary school killing spree in Uvalde, Texas. The Texas school police chief criticized for his actions says in his first extensive published comments that he did not consider himself the incident commander as the massacre unfolded. Uvalde School District Police Chief Pete Arredondo told the Texas Tribune that he assumed someone else had taken control of the law enforcement response to the shooting at Robb Elementary School. The Biden administration is expected to lay out a new plan today to deal with immigration and migration in the Western Hemisphere. It comes on the final day of the Summit of the Americas in Los Angeles. President Biden spoke about it last night.
Each one of our countries have been impacted by unprecedented migration. And I believe it's our shared responsibility to meet this challenge. And I emphasize shared.
President Biden also promoted a new health initiative by investing in health workers. Global News, 24 hours a day on air and on Bloomberg Quick Take, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts from more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg. Nathan.
All right, Michael. Thank you. Coming up to 5:10 on Wall Street, time for the Bloomberg Sports Update. Good morning, John Stasher.
Good morning, Nathan. Can the Rangers do it again? 5 wins in these playoffs when faced with elimination came from 3-1 down against Pittsburgh, 3-2 down versus Carolina. The Rangers now trail Tampa Bay 3-2. Much like Game 3 at Tampa, Game 5 at the Garden was looking like it was headed to overtime, and then it wasn't.
Point had been. Right point, Sergachev. Sergachev shoots, scores! Sergachev! Another goal for Sergachev. It's 2-1 Lightning with a 1:50 left in the third.
WFLA defenseman Mikhail Sergachev had not scored a goal in the playoffs. He scored Tampa's first goal. That game winner actually went in off Andre Palat. Tampa added an empty netter and won 3-1. Rangers had taken a 1-0 lead on a Ryan Lindgren goal second period. They've only scored 4 goals in the last 3 games, all losses, and this lost their first at home since Game 1 versus the Penguins. Game 6 tomorrow in Tampa. If the Rangers can win, it's back to the Garden for a Game 7 on Tuesday. NBA Finals Game 4 tonight in Boston. Celtics lead the Warriors 2-1. Steph Curry hurt his foot at the end of Game 3 but says he will play tonight. What a win for the Yankees in a night where the Twins teed off on Garrett Cole. They began the game with 3 straight home runs, only the second time in Major League history a game has started like that. Cole gave up 5 homers. Minnesota led 7-3. Back came the Yankees to win 10-7, and the guys that led the comeback, the two who have struggled all season to play, Joey Gallo, 2 home runs, 3 RBIs, Aaron Hicks, a homer. He drove in 3. Yanks have won 8 of 9. They host the Cubs tonight. John Stashower, Bloomberg Sports. Nathan?
Thank you, John. S&P futures right now up 2 points. Dow futures down 20. NASDAQ futures are higher by 37 points as we wait the May CPI data due out at 8:30 Wall Street time. You're listening to Bloomberg Daybreak. Bloomberg 11:30 weather, partly mostly sunny on this Friday, low 80s for highs. Chance for an afternoon shower or two tomorrow with highs near 75 degrees. Scattered showers Sunday, right now 64 degrees in Central Park.
Markets, headlines, and breaking news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business app, and at Bloomberg Quick Take. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And I'm Karen Moscow. European stocks are extending losses as investors brace for U.S. inflation data that may help decide the course of the Federal Reserve's tightening path. S&P futures are little changed this morning. Dow futures are as well. NASDAQ futures higher, up 42. The DAX in Germany is down 1.4%. The 10-year Treasury up 5/32, yield 3.02%. The yield on the 2-year, 2.83%. NYMEX crude oil is up 0.1% or 15 cents at $121.66 a barrel. COMEX gold down 0.3% or $6.10 at $18.46.80 an ounce. The euro 1.0599 against the dollar. British pound 1.2476. The yen is at 133.93. And looking at Bitcoin this morning, it's down 0.6% at $29,970. And that's at Bloomberg Business Flash. Now here's Michael Barr with more on what's going on around the world. Michael, good morning.
Good morning, Karen. The first public hearing by the House Committee investigating the January 6th riot included testimony from Capitol Police Officer Caroline Edwards. She told lawmakers it was carnage and chaos as she fought the mob. Meanwhile, Republican Committee co-chair Liz Cheney laid the blame for the riot on Donald Trump.
You will hear how President Trump summoned a violent mob and directed them illegally to march on the United States Capitol.
Cheney and the committee will hold another hearing next Monday. In the NHL playoffs, the Rangers are on the brink of elimination after losing Game 5 to the Lightning in the East Final 3-1. In baseball, the Yankees won, the Red Sox, Orioles, Nationals, and Giants and A's all lost. Global News, 24 hours a day on air and on Bloomberg Quick Take. Powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr, and this is Bloomberg. Nathan.
Thank you, Michael. It is 519 on Wall Street, live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios. This is Bloomberg Daybreak. And for more on last night's first primetime public hearing for the House January 6th committee, we are joined from our Bloomberg 99.1 studios in Washington, D.C. by Bloomberg Washington correspondent Joe Matthew, the host of Sound On here on Bloomberg Radio. Joe, good morning. The committee is starting to lay out the timeline, the case for why they say the threat to democracy from January 6th is still with this country. What stood out to you from last night?
Well, it was just the opening salvo. I'm deeply curious to hear and see what we're going to learn over the course of what will be about a half dozen hearings. Congresswoman Liz Cheney was going out of her way not only to reveal information last night and start that timeline, Nathan, but also to preview that there will be much more coming up. The final hearing is also at this time scheduled to air in prime time. That'll be a couple of weeks off. And some of what we heard last evening from Cheney, as well as Benny Thompson, the chair of the committee, had already leaked. It was already out there, including reports from within the West Wing about the president's tacit approval of the attack, his suggestion that Vice President Mike Pence deserved to be targeted by the mob. But we saw new footage from the attack, courtesy of a documentarian who was actually one of the witnesses last evening. And Nathan, it just brought back visceral memories of January 6th and reminding us how much abuse that law enforcement took that day. Some of the body cam footage, the firsthand the personal view from the police was remarkable. Also important to hear from the highest ranking officials in the Trump White House in from their testimony. The committee shared clips of former Attorney General Bill Barr describing telling Donald Trump that claims of fraud were BS. He used the actual word. Yeah. Trump's daughter Ivanka saying that she respected and believed the AG. We saw Jared Kushner as well referring to the White House counsel's threats to resign as simply whining. Now, look, Republicans call this effort illegitimate and unconstitutional. They are not buying this. But members of the panel, including two Republicans, Liz Cheney and Adam Kinzinger, say they will prove coordination, if not conspiracy, to overturn the election. And they say it all began with a White House meeting December 18th. Donald Trump, Rudy Giuliani, Sidney Powell, and Michael Flynn all in one room before White House officials even heard that was going on. They came in to try to get things under control. It was about an hour after that meeting in which they discussed the military seizing voting boxes and so forth, that the president sent the tweet inviting people to Washington January 6th, in which he said it's going to be wild.
Yeah, and I got to say, one thing that stood out to me from last night's video footage that aired from that documentarian, Joe, is the protester reading out a tweet from President Trump against Mike Pence through the bullhorn in real time, sort of making the impression that the former president's comments in real time were egging the mob on.
That's exactly what they want to present here, and that came from a pre-produced video. We knew that this would be part of the presentation. They actually hired a former president from ABC News to help put this together. So you're actually seeing the tweet from Donald Trump on the screen while hearing, as you're saying, this guy in a megaphone reading it out loud to the mob at the Capitol that day. And of course, then we saw the images of the gallows that had been erected. Nathan, it's almost like something from a bad dream.
We're only at the very beginning of these hearings here, as you mentioned, Joe. But the question, I guess, is whether recounting January 6th is going to break through with voters who right now are really focused on inflation. And we're going to get the data again this morning that shows that inflation is still with us.
Well, that's right. And that's exactly what Republicans will tell you, so that while this panel is conducting its work that they say is in an illegitimate fashion, they're not acknowledging the issues that actually impact Americans right now. The White House, of course, is acknowledging that. And the president has been speaking to the inflation issue on a daily basis. In fact, he's going to be at the Port of Los Angeles later on today, Nathan, for that very issue as he's spending time in California for the Summit of the Americas. So you're right about that. It's very difficult to tell right now after one hearing how much of an impact this might have on people, but it also could act to simply galvanize existing beliefs that people already have.
So in our last 30 seconds here, Joe, what are you going to be looking for? What's the one thing you want to see from the hearings that are coming up later on?
Well, I think it's, you know, it's one thing to go through what happened, and the connecting of the dots is going to be very important here, that they say they can prove with information we haven't heard or seen yet. But we want to hear more about the existing threat to democracy, not just what happened on January 6th that day, but what could happen in this coming election or in 24, and whether this committee can get its hands around that.
Thanks, as always. Bloomberg's Joe Matthew with us from Washington, D.C., the host of Sound On. Imagine we're going to have much more coverage of the hearings to come on Bloomberg Sound On weekdays at 5 p.m. Wall Street time right here on Bloomberg Radio. Right now, S&P futures down 1 point. Dow futures down 52. NASDAQ futures still higher by 26 points. And the 10-year Treasury yield right now 3.02%. You're listening to Bloomberg Daybreak. Bloomberg 11:30 weather, sunshine low 80s to wrap up this week. Could see some showers tomorrow with highs near 75 and scattered showers Sunday with highs near 80. Right now, 64 degrees.
Broadcasting live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studio in New York. Bloomberg 1130. To Washington, D.C., Bloomberg 991. To Boston, Bloomberg 1061. To San Francisco, Bloomberg 960. To the country, Sirius XM Channel 119. And around the globe, the Bloomberg Business App and BloombergRadio.com. This is Bloomberg Daybreak.
It's 5:30 on Wall Street. Good morning. I'm Nathan Hager.
And I'm Karen Moscow. We are just about 4 hours away from the open of U.S. trading. Let's get you up to date on the news you need to know at this hour. We begin in the nation's capital, where the House committee investigating the insurrection at the U.S. Capitol on January 6th of last year held its first primetime hearings last night. Bloomberg's Ed Baxter has the latest on that story.
They laid out a timeline through video evidence and testimony. Committee Chair Benny Thompson.
Donald Trump was at the center of this conspiracy. And ultimately, Donald Trump, the President of the United States, spurred a mob of domestic enemies of the Constitution.
And co-chair Liz Cheney saying Trump did nothing to stop the violence.
You will hear that leaders on Capitol Hill begged the president for help, including Republican leader McCarthy, who was, quote, scared.
And they played clip after clip of the president's advisors saying that they knew the election was lost, but that Trump persisted in demanding action. I'm Ed Baxter, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Okay, Ed, thanks. Turning to markets now, stocks fell for a second straight day yesterday. Investors will be closely watching the latest inflation data due out this morning. It's expected to show annual consumer price gains of more than 8%.
Meanwhile, oil's hovering around $121 a barrel as investors weigh a tightening global market and loosening of COVID lockdowns in China.
In corporate news, Karen, Boston-based State Street is denying a report it's looking to acquire Credit Suisse. Bloomberg's John Tucker joins us live with the latest on the saga. John?
Nathan, State Street says it's not pursuing any acquisition or business combination with Credit Suisse. A Swiss blog reported State Street could make a bid for Credit Suisse, citing a single person. A Jefferies Financial Group analyst says the combination is highly unlikely. The Swiss bank has spent much of the past 18 months struggling. Its stock has fallen 73% over the past 8 years. Live in New York, I'm John Tucker, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, John, thank you. Meanwhile, another major bank is being investigated over hiring practices, and Bloomberg's Renita Young has the latest.
Federal prosecutors are investigating claims that Wells Fargo violated anti-discrimination laws by conducting fake interviews with diverse job applicants. That's according to the New York Times, citing anonymous sources. The Manhattan U.S. Attorney's Office Civil Rights Unit is leading the investigation, and this all comes after a May 19th New York Times report claiming the bank was interviewing non-white and female candidates for jobs that were already promised to other people. Renita Young, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Renita, thank you. Straight ahead, your latest local headlines, plus a check of sports, and this is Bloomberg.
Okay, Karen, thank you. It is 5:33 on Wall Street. We're at 64 degrees in Central Park, and delays building on the Cross Bronx Expressway with a crash eastbound at Webster Avenue. More coming up in traffic. Michael Barr's here first with what else is going on in New York and around the world. Michael?
Thank you very much, Nathan. New York City Health Commissioner Ashwin Vasan said that the city has passed its latest COVID-19 peak. In a tweet, Vasan decided the 26% drop in the case rate between May 23rd and June 5th countering the 2 months' worth of sustained increase of virus transmission. Despite the city heading into a safer environment, Vassin still encouraged New Yorkers to continue to wear masks in indoor environments, test, and stay home if they feel sick. Federal government data indicates the rate of new COVID infections has slowed in the Northeast, even as cases surge in other parts of the country. In Florida, Jackson Memorial Chief Medical Director Dr. Hani Atallah says it could be worse.
We're again seeing an increase, but the severity is not so bad.
Dr. Atallah tells ABC two new Omicron subvariants are driving their numbers up. The Texas school police chief criticized for his actions during one of the deadliest classroom shootings in the U.S. says that he didn't consider himself the incident commander as the massacre unfolded. Uvalde School District Police Chief Pete Arredondo told the Texas Tribune that he assumed someone else had taken control of the law enforcement response to the shooting at Robb Elementary School. An 18-year-old gunman killed 19 children and two teachers. President Biden, speaking at the summit of the Americas in Los Angeles, promoted a new health initiative.
With our action plan on health and resilience, we're going to help our region recover from COVID-19 while strengthening health systems and improving our ability to respond to future health emergencies by investing in health workers.
President Biden is also expected to lay out a new plan today to deal with immigration and migration in the Western Hemisphere. Global news, 24 hours a day on air and on Bloomberg Quick Take, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr, and this is Bloomberg. Nathan.
Okay, Michael, thank you. 5:35 on Wall Street, time for the Bloomberg Sports Update with John Stanshauer.
All right, Nathan, Rangers and Lightning, low-scoring Game 5 at the Garden, scoreless first period. Tampa Bay only had three shots on goal. Rangers broke through, second period goal, an unlikely score. Defenseman Ryan Lindgren threw it to the net, made its way in, an unassisted goal. But later in the second, Tampa defenseman Mikhail Sergachev did the same thing. He hadn't scored at all in the playoffs. 1-1 under 2 minutes left. Sergachev did the same thing from the point. This one went in off Andre Palat, who had scored the game winner in Game 3. Lightning added an empty netter. Tampa Bay won 3-1. So after trailing 2-0, they now lead the series 3-2. And if they win at home tomorrow, they will have won in an 11th playoff series in a row. And they'll take on Colorado for the Stanley Cup. If the Rangers can win, and they have fought off elimination 5 times already, it's back to the Garden for Game 7, which would be next Tuesday. This might just be the Yankees' year when you consider how they won at Minnesota, a game where Gerrit Cole gave up 5 home runs. He served up 3 to the Twins' first 3 batters of the night, and yet the Yanks came from 7-3 down to win 10-7 due to the hitting exploits of the two guys who pretty much haven't done any hitting all season, and yet Joey Gallo and Aaron Hicks combined for 3 home runs. 6 RBIs. Mets were off. They visit the Angels tonight. The Angels won last night. They ended their 14-game losing streak. They began the new LIV Tour in London. Charles Schwartzel shot 65 as a one-shot lead. This is the PGA Tour announced that their 17 members playing this tourney are suspended indefinitely. PGA says you have to pick a tour. John Stashauer, Bloomberg Sports. Nathan.
Thank you, John. It's 5:37 on Wall Street. Time now for the Tri-State Business Report. Here's Bloomberg's Ed Corey.
New York Governor Kathy Hochul says the state is accepting bids from design firms and architects for the multi-billion dollar renovation of the much-maligned Penn Station in Manhattan. Hochul calls the latest step a milestone in the plan to redevelop the station. Proposals will be due July 28th. Hip-hop mogul Jay-Z and Block CEO Jack Dorsey are teaming up to take Bitcoin and financial education to the rapper's childhood home. Dorsey announced the launch of Bitcoin Academy Thursday. The education program is going to be free for residents living at the Marcy Houses, a public housing complex in Brooklyn. With summer in full swing and Pride Month kicking into gear, it's official. Staying in Fire Island Pines is more expensive than ever. The Pines is one of 17 communities on a spit that runs along the southern coast of Long Island, forming a barrier between the Great South Bay and the Atlantic. That's your Bloomberg Tri-State Business Report. I'm Ed Corey.
Thanks, Ed. It's 5:38 on Wall Street. Bloomberg Radio is on the air from San Francisco to New York, London to Hong Kong. Let's check in with our global news team for some of the top stories heard on our 300 affiliate radio stations around the world.
I'm
Steve Potusk on 1010 Winds in New York. We're talking about when it comes to home buying. As mortgage rates rise, cash is king.
I'm Courtney Donahoe on KTRH in Houston. Bosses say millennials are far more likely to quit their jobs than Gen Z.
I'm Gina Cervetti, and for WBBM in Chicago, I'm reporting that you may have noticed a few nutritious menu items have disappeared at McDonald's.
I'm Stephen Carroll on Bloomberg DAB Digital Radio in London. We've been speaking to Ukraine's finance minister, who says the country needs more help from the IMF as its economy slumps due to the Russian invasion.
I'm Ed Corey on WTAM in Cleveland. I'm reporting Signet Jewelers will settle a lawsuit involving claims by about 70,000 female employees.
And those are some of the stories. Our 2,700 Bloomberg journalists and analysts are working on this morning around the world. It's 5:39 on Wall Street.
The following is an editorial from Bloomberg Opinion.
China suffered a rare diplomatic setback the other day when 10 Pacific Island nations deflected its offer of a trade and security deal. However, the rebuff won't end China's efforts to exert influence over this strategically vital region. To head off further Chinese expansion, the U.S. will need to demonstrate that it can meet Pacific Islanders' needs better than China can. The first step must be for the U.S. to swiftly conclude negotiations over assistance to the Marshall Islands, Micronesia, and Palau. Just as important, the U.S. should work with partners like Australia and Japan on a comprehensive strategy for the region. A good plan would include infrastructure development, trade incentives, and efforts to address issues like illegal fishing. That would allow the U.S. to promote the welfare of the Pacific Islands while keeping a close eye on China. This editorial was written by the Bloomberg Opinion Editorial Board. I'm David Shipley. For more Bloomberg Opinion, please go to Bloomberg.com/opinion or OPN Go on the Bloomberg Terminal.
This has been Bloomberg Opinion.
And you can hear Bloomberg Opinion editorials every weekday at this time. Terminal customers can read more at OPIN Go. S&P futures little changed at the moment. Dow futures are down 40 points. NASDAQ futures are higher by 34 points. 10-year Treasury yield 3.029% ahead of May CPI. We'll get a preview next with Drew Mattis, Chief Investment Strategist at MetLife. This is Bloomberg. Bloomberg 1130 weather, partly to mostly sunny, low 80s today. Chance for an afternoon shower to start the weekend off. Tomorrow's high near 75. Scattered showers possible Sunday as well. Currently 64 degrees in Central Park.
Markets, headlines, and breaking news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business app, and at Bloomberg Quick Take. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And I'm Karen Moscow, and European stocks are extending losses as investors brace for U.S. inflation data that may help decide the course of the Federal Reserve's tightening path. S&P futures, they're higher after the gauge fell 2.4% yesterday, and we check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. S&P futures now up 4 points. Dow futures, little change. NASDAQ futures up 51. The DAX in Germany is down 1.33%. The 10-year Treasury up 3/32nds, yield 3.02%, and the yield on the two-year, 2.84%. NYMEX crude oil is up 0.33% or 45 cents at $121.96 a barrel. COMEX gold down 0.4% or $7.60 at $18.45.20 an ounce. This flash brought to you by Informatica. In the cloud, your data has the power to do the extraordinary. Manage data across any location in the cloud for accurate and actionable insights. More at Informatica.com. That's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Now here's Michael Barr with more on what's going on around the world. Michael.
Karen, thank you very much. As part of their ongoing investigation, the January 6th committee will present more testimony Monday following a hearing held during prime time last night. Committee Chairman Benny Thompson.
January 6th was the culmination of an attempted coup, a brazen attempt, as one rioter put it shortly after January 6th, to overthrow the government.
President Trump and his supporters are calling it a witch hunt. In the NHL playoffs, the Rangers are on the brink of elimination after losing Game 5 to the Lightning in the East Final, 3-1. In baseball, the Yankees won. The Red Sox, Orioles, Nationals, Giants, and A's all lost. Global News, 24 hours a day on air and on Bloomberg Quick Take, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr, and this is Bloomberg. Nathan.
Okay, Michael, thank you. We're just about at 5:49 on Wall Street, live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios. This is Bloomberg Daybreak, and the market focus this morning is on inflation, with the May Consumer Price Index due out in just a little more than 2.5 hours' time. Ahead of that, we're joined this morning by Drew Mattis, Chief Market Strategist at MetLife Investment Management. Drew, it's always good to speak with you. Thanks for being with us. And as I look at the Bloomberg Terminal, the economists we've surveyed think that year-over-year inflation is going to pretty much hold where it was last month at a very elevated 8.3%, and they're calling for a surge in month-over-month inflation. What's your expectation of what we're going to see this morning?
Well, we're looking more carefully at the core because we feel that the Fed is really a case where there's nothing they can do about food and energy prices. And all the interest rate hikes in the world aren't going to solve that. So they're going to be looking at core inflation, which is another way of saying the underlying movement within inflation that could be sustained past any sort of near-term geopolitical crisis. In that case, you know, what we want to see is we want to see the year-over-year numbers there coming down. That is the market consensus. And even within that, it's going to be important to see what areas are showing strength or rising inflation and what areas are showing some weakness. We'd like to see airfares begin to come down. We'd like to see weakness in apparel begin to materialize. And we'd like to see, signs that consumers are altering their behavior to move around higher priced areas. And in some cases, they've already done that. When you look at, for example, new cars and used cars, the reason those sales have been coming down, some of it's an inventory story, but some of it's just people looking at the price and saying no.
Are you seeing signs at this point that consumers are starting to move around? Are you seeing signs that they're starting to buckle under the pressure of the prices that we've been experiencing through the last few months?
There are hints that consumers are becoming more stressed, and one of those actually comes out later today. Consumer sentiment and consumer confidence are both not behaving the way that you would expect with a 3.6% unemployment rate. And I think it's one of those things that we're watching very carefully because obviously with the consumer being 70% of the U.S. economy, if you lose the consumer, that's pretty much the ballgame. The confidence the consumer has in their ability to keep spending money, to maintain their income, to see gains in their assets. These are all things that play to the broader point of, how sustainable is an economic outlook when you have inflation like this? And it's one of the reasons why the Fed has been trying to kind of keep telling the market that they're going to handle it. The risk we run into, though, is that a lot of what they're looking at is not things that they can control. The Fed might be left with a choice of we're going to have high inflation. Do you want high growth or low growth?
Well, what's your outlook on whether we are going to see a slowdown in growth? Are you holding out the possibility of recession this year based on what the Fed does?
To be frank, it's too late this year to get a recession. There's just not enough time left in the year for it to materialize because of the nature of the things that are affecting the economy. They all take time, right? Consumers maybe react a bit more quickly, but if you look at the business sector, we've seen some margin compression. And as those margins compress, then, CEOs go back to their executives and say, all right, how do we maintain our margins? Usually the answer is expenses. So then it's like, okay, well, how do we manage our expenses? And every one of these steps takes a little bit of time. And there's just not enough time in the year for it to play out in a way that would be material enough to see, I think, a recession this year. I think a recession this year is highly unlikely. A recession towards the end of next year, is increasingly likely, particularly as the Fed piles on rate hikes to work against inflation that they have little hope of controlling.
Only about 30 seconds left here, Drew. But if we do start to see a drop off in core inflation, what does that mean for the Fed's rate hike path?
Well, I think then that supports the idea that the Fed could maybe pull back later this year in terms of the speed of rate hikes. You know, we've gone 75 basis points, and there's been a pretty good market reaction to that. Think about hitting the market consensus for rate hikes and what the market reaction might be for that. So I don't think they want to go there. I think they're hoping long-term inflation expectations remain contained. They can pull back earlier, and they're out.
Thank you, Drew. Thanks for being with us this morning. Drew Mattis, Chief Market Strategist, MetLife Investment Management. May CPI due out at 8:30 Wall Street time. Karen?
All right, Nathan, thank you. It is 5:54 on Wall Street now. It's time for the Bloomberg Law Report. It is brought to you by American Arbitration Association. Business disputes are inevitable. Resolve faster with the American Arbitration Association, the global leader in alternative dispute resolution for over 90 years. More at ADR.org. Let's get to the legal stories we're watching this morning from Bloomberg's Jeff Bellinger.
The Internal Revenue Service raised the mileage deduction for vehicles used for business purposes by 4 cents to 62.5 cents per mile. A federal judge in Connecticut rejected a suit filed by a black employee of the Connecticut Department of Corrections over the department's response to a Confederate flag license plate on a co-worker's personal car. An administrative law judge ruled against ADT in a patent infringement suit over Vivint security monitoring and automation control panels.
Bloomberg Law. Everything you need, all on one legal research platform, including guidance, analysis, and Bloomberg Market Intelligence. Find out more at BloombergLaw.com.
All right, Jeff, thank you. Now, another legal story we're watching. When the Supreme Court justices rise for their summer recess, they will have handed down 59 signed decisions and argued cases. It's the third year in a row they have failed to reach 60 decisions. You have to go back to the Civil War to find so few cases on the court's docket. In fact, until 1988, the court used to decide more than 150 cases a year. So what happened? To find out, Bloomberg's June Grasso speaks to constitutional law expert Stephen Vladeck, a professor at the University of Texas Law School.
Many court watchers have pointed out the justices' slow pace in coming out with decisions this term. But in an opinion piece, you point out that for the last few years, the court has been handing down fewer decisions than ever before, sort of the incredible shrinking docket.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is, to me, almost as big a story, maybe even a bigger story, than the fact that the court just happens to be behind this particular term. I mean, when all is said and done, when the court does eventually rise for its summer recess, it's going to have handed down probably no more than 59 signed decisions and argued cases. Last term, June, it was 56. The term before it was 53, whereas before 3 years ago, the court hadn't dipped below 60 of these signed merits decisions since the Civil War. And this is part of a broader trend where, you know, as recently as the early 2000s, the court was hearing 85 to 90 cases a year. In the 2010s, it was still 75 to 80 cases a year. But really, since Justice Kennedy's retirement, the docket has fallen into the low 60s, now the high 50s. And, you know, I think there are plenty of folks who would say, great. Like, if this court has less to do, that's not going to bother them. But I actually think that there are some longer term problems with the Supreme Court's docket continuing to shrink in this respect.
Yeah, you point out that in 1988, the court used to hear more than 150 cases a year, which seems astonishing right now. So what happened?
So by the mid-1980s, there was still a large chunk of the court's appellate jurisdiction that was mandatory, meaning that were cases that the justices had to take up, especially appeals from state courts. And largely at the justices' own request, Congress in 1988 revisited that and gave the Supreme Court just about plenary control over its docket. Congress in 1925 had really expanded the practice of what we call certiorari, of discretionary review, when the Supreme Court was reviewing lower federal courts. In 1988, Congress expanded that to encompass most appeals from state courts as well, and overnight.
And that's Stephen Vladeck, a professor at the University of Texas Law School, speaking with Bloomberg's June Grasso. Catch more of that interview, plus analysis of the latest legal news, by subscribing to the Bloomberg Law Podcast. And this is Bloomberg.